Hey, what's going on, listeners? Thank you so much for listening to the Go Long podcast. Here is another edition of the Go Long Happy Hour that subscribers were able to join this past Sunday night. We had Quincy Avery on. He's the one of the best private quarterback coaches, teachers of the position, really, in the country. And his story alone is pretty remarkable. He got into that, what it was like living out of his car, trying to reach any quarterback who'd listen to him on Facebook. And eventually he was able to kind of carve out his space in the universe with this all. And it's an ultra competitive space, that's for sure. So just some fascinating stuff from Quincy Avery. He talked a lot about working with Jordan Love, Justin Fields, Deshaun Watson a couple weeks ago, seeing Jordan Love up close next to those guys. I just thought his perspective would be really good on that whole situation. And he even offered some predictions on what he thinks is going to happen with Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson. So wanted to include this conversation within our podcast for everybody to listen to. And as always, you can subscribe to Go Long anytime, golongtd.com, to get the exclusive access to these weekly happy hours. And as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for rating, reviewing, sharing with a friend. You guys are what makes this go. So we greatly, greatly appreciate it. You're the second person to join us from the golf course. I think Ryan Leaf was on the golf course when he was on one of these too. So you got a high bar there. I think he drilled it right off the tee. Of course, all to see. So we'll see what you got. But did you just finish up? You said,
man, I'm on 18. I just hit two balls out of bounds. We were even through 17, so I lost. But here we are.
Beautiful, Quincy. You're the man. We were just blowing some smoke up your ass before we started here, but no, I always love talking quarterbacks with you, football with you. You're one of the smartest people I know in the game. And you know what's weird though? So we connected a few years ago doing that Deshaun Watson story at Bleacher Report, but I don't know if we've ever actually sat down and I don't your past, how you got to this position, how you kind of became, you know, the head of QB takeover, molding a generation of quarterbacks, really. Like, I don't even know where you start. Like,
you want, how long of a version do you want?
You can go as long as you want, man. We've got all the time in the world.
Okay, cool. I got done playing football at Morehouse, and I wanted to get into coaching. I didn't really have any connections or inroads into the coaching world. So I'm like, all right, I'm not sure I'm going to do this. Rick Neuheisler got the job the year before at UCLA. I figured, like, I want to go coach football in Los Angeles. So I drive across the country from Atlanta to L.A., and I go sit in the office. And I sit on, you know, when you walk in the chair, I'm right there. And Neuheisler walks in. He's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I want a job. He's like, man, that's not how this works. This is big-time college football. The next day, he comes in. I'm still there. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, no, I'm serious. I want a job. Finally, the third day, he comes in. And he says the same thing. I'm like, he's like, all right, if you're here when I leave, we'll schedule a meeting. So he leaves at night at like 8:30 p.m. or something like that. I'm still sitting in the chair. He's like, all right, come meet me tomorrow morning. So I meet with him. He found out I knew a couple of people that he knew. He's like, look, I don't have a job for you, but I'll let you volunteer. So for the next 2 years, I volunteered there. For the next year, I volunteered. I got a paid position the year after that, on the UCLA staff, working under Norm Chow and Neuheisler. So I got like a graduate degree in quarterback play, learned a ton, got to be around some really good guys. But then I started to realize that I wanted to get in the private quarterback training space. Like, I saw it bubbling. Like, I saw that there was space for someone who did things a little bit different. And I thought that I could be that person. I was probably a little bit more naive at that point on exactly what it would take to make it. So I leave from Los Angeles. I drive to Atlanta and I'm like, all right, this should be easy. I just coached at UCLA. I'm about to get a bunch of clients really quickly. It took me 19 months to get my first client. So I lived out of my car for 19 months. I would Facebook message guys. I would try whatever I could in order to get somebody to train with me. And the way that I actually got my first client was that I kind of tricked Joshua Dobbs, who's now a backup for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And what I did was tell him I had this big elite private camp. He's like, hey, I can't make it. I can't make your camp, but can we get a session? I'm like, hell yeah, we can get a session in. We ended up doing a session. Me and him had a really good connection. And he kind of helped me like get my career going, but it was 19 months of really like living out of my car, crashing on friends' couches and Facebook messaging any kid who's in the Georgia Middle School Athletic Association directory trying to find clients. And what I was fortunate enough to happen was 2 years, I worked with Josh for 2 years. He makes it to the Elite 11. Then Elite 11 comes back to Atlanta. I bump into Trent Dilfer. Trent and I are talking. My dad had actually coached Trent Dilfer with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he gave me a chance to come try out in Columbus, Ohio at a regional, and then ended up getting on that staff. And that really allowed me, really my career to kind of take off and put me in a position to meet a lot of the top guys that we see today across football.
That's phenomenal. I never knew all that. Like, what's life like living out of your car? Like, you're sleeping like in your car.
So yeah, I'm sleeping in my car, crashing friends. You got a bunch of duffel bags, right? You got to organize them. Shirts in one bag, shorts in one bag. And then you got your shoes laid out. But what I did have was an LA Fitness membership, so it let me get a workout in the morning and then a shower in right after that so I could maintain some level of normalcy and then go hit the Starbucks and get on it.
So you've got to have just, like, this belief in yourself then? Like, I mean, there's – I think anybody else in that position, it's like – holy shit, I got to go flip some burgers or do something else. I mean, you said 19 months, like, you've got to have a belief in you and your ability to teach the position to keep going.
Yeah, what it was for me is I'm really big on like my words and my actions being congruent. And if I say that I really want to do something, then I have to do everything in my power to actually do the thing that I said I wanted to do. And I didn't think that it would be fair to myself to like be half in or give myself another way out. Like, I got a college degree from like a school in Atlanta that would have allowed me to get a job somewhere. But I knew like, hey, this is the thing that I want to do. Let me do everything that I can to really make this work.
And Joshua Dobbs, that was the big breakthrough then. That was kind of like what got it rolling for you.
If there had been no Joshua Dobbs, I'm not sure that I would be like where I am today. And it's kind of like the result of like just being in the right time in the right place, but also like putting in the legwork in order to create an opportunity where you can actually be on the receiving end of what's supposed to happen.
Definitely. Well, man, and here you are today. And hey, if you got to swing your golf club, please do it.
No, I'm done. I just walked up 18.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I rattled off a few of the names, but like the quarterbacks that you've worked with the last few years, I mean, obviously Deshaun Watson, you know him so well, you're close with him, but even in addition to that, Jalen Hurts, Trey Lance, Fields and Jordan Love here a couple weeks ago, and younger guys, I mean, back there, we're talking high school guys, college guys, like, how would you describe your job today and how many quarterbacks you're really working with?
I'm working with about 12 NFL quarterbacks, so I think I work with more NFL quarterbacks probably than anybody in the country. Oh, it's probably close. John Beck and I are probably neck and neck in like the number of actual guys that we work with. I have probably the largest group of college quarterbacks out there. And it's cool to really grow a business, not only grow a business, but know that you're helping guys out and helping them really be successful, and knowing that I've helped develop some of the best quarterbacks in the entire country. Like, that means a lot to me that the thing that I want to do is help out the best people in the world live their dreams. And I'm doing that.
I mean, it's gotta be competitive as hell, right? I mean, there's so many different quarterback teachers out there.
many self-anointed, many that are really, really good. I'm sure there's some that aren't. Like, how do you compete against the John Becks and other guys? And what makes you different, you think? I mean, what are you teaching about the position that just stands out from everybody else?
Yeah, the level of competition in terms of that space is really, really high. And we're all, like, I think I do a good job of like finding guys early, creating really good relationships with them. Because a lot, I mean, you've kind of seen how I interact with my guys. Me and a lot of my guys are like, I'm like a big brother, one of their best friends. Like I'm there for them to help them develop as a person. But what I think that I do different than anybody else, or the way that I train the quarterback position, is a little bit unique. And the fact that I focus 70% of my time on like off schedule things. Like, how do I create a situation where guys are able to make throws when things are cloudy or things are not clear? And I think that's the way that the game is played right now. And a lot of the guys that I work with, that really fits into their skill set. Like, if you watch the guys that I work with play, the things that we work on happen game after game after game. And I think that there's a certain type of guy that I work with that I fit with, right? The guy, maybe a little bit more mobile. Guys who create and extend plays, like those are the guys who I find myself again and again working with. It works, right? So that's kind of like my niche. And those guys find me, and then we get to have lasting relationships, and I'm helping them develop. But yeah, it's crazy competition. There's probably five guys that I think of in the space who really work with a lot of the top NFL guys, and we kind of battle in terms of trying to get those guys, but have a pretty good relationship with most of them.
You guys don't want to just kill each other?
Only when they're teaching bad information.
Awesome. Well, I know we've got some Packer fans in here, so I mean, I'll let them kind of fire away, but like, you were just with Jordan Love, so you can probably confirm that Aaron Rodgers is done. The Jordan Love era is going to begin week one at New Orleans. You can lock that in here on Sunday night at 9:26.
Man, don't get me fired from anybody taking any extraordinary claims. But what I can say is that was my first opportunity to really work with Jordan Love. He and I have talked a good bit, but seeing the things that he can do, it makes you aware of like why the Packers would use a draft capital to select somebody like that in the first round. His arm is really, really strong. He's really athletic, really mobile. Like, to be able to play in that NFC North in those cold weather games where the ball has to cut through the wind, like, if you want to be successful, you're going to need somebody like that. And I think that in terms of the future, like, Aaron Rodgers may be there this year, may not be next year, but down the line, Jordan's going to be the starting quarterback for the Packers, right? And he's going to be in a situation where I think he's going to be really successful. He's going to be able to do a lot of the things that they've seen over the past. I'm not saying he's going to be Aaron Rodgers, but a lot of the things that they've seen, he's going to be able to carry the torch.
What did you guys do together? Like, what did you work on specifically and that you can say?
Yeah, so we did 2 days. Day one was more on rhythm and one-piece movement throws. So what that means to me is, like, creating situations where getting really good at stopping our energy with our break step, putting their fifth step in the ground or whatever step, the final step in the ground, so that we can make throws on balance and from a really good position. And then we worked on some things off of either just a one-piece movement, like a defender attacking one spot and you making a move, or just coming off a reset, right? Like, number one's not initially open and you're working through like a peer progression concept or progression with an option, but you're tying your feet and your eyes together in order to get to the next read. And then the second day, we were a lot more movement, a lot more off schedule, either throwing while still moving in a pocket style stance. So like a back pedal, or still shuffling up in the pocket, or creating space in that way. And then we did some true off platform stuff where they really had to create space, get on the full sprint. And then the last thing that we did was off schedule to platform, right? So all the situations you see in a game where a guy goes from a full sprint and gets back on platform so that they can make a throw from a traditional base that we see time and time again. We did some of those things. So we had we got through a lot of things. And it was really productive, not only to work with him in that way, but it was productive to work with him around Justin Fields and Deshaun Watson, two guys who I've worked with a lot over the last few years. So anything that I was explaining, like Deshaun does a really good job explaining to guys like how what we're working on relates to something that happened to him in the game, right? Like, oh, this happened versus Tennessee 2 years ago on a second down when I escaped from the pocket left, flipped my hips, and threw a pass down the field. So
does he have a game similar to Deshaun? Like, are they similar that way? It's kind of a lofty comparison at this point, obviously, but.
Yeah. So what I would say is Deshaun may be a little bit more athletic, a little bit twitchier, but Jordan's arm is probably a little bit stronger. So he, there's some trade-offs with anybody, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I know Jake, Dan, we got a lot of folks in here, so I'll shut the hell up and let somebody else ask a good question.
Yeah, so from your own experience training quarterbacks and what you've observed from NFL coaching staffs, what would you say is the hardest thing to teach a young quarterback?
Sam, this is a really good question. One of the most difficult things, I don't think people think about this enough, is the transition and understanding the playbook, right? And that's from the mental side of things, just because the amount of things that you're asked to know, the knowledge you're required to have in terms of like pre-snap, post-snap, safety rotation, making the checks, like, all right, we got 4 weeks. I got to make sure I'm checking outside zone, right? Like all those little nuanced things, those take a good bit of time. But then getting guys to trust what the hardest thing on Sundays is getting guys to trust what they see, right? Because if you see it and you have any indecision at the NFL level, you're late. And then those guys are following up and they're making a play, right? You just don't have the opportunity because you can't just have a strong arm and make up for things just by throwing the ball hard. That's not how it works. You got to really trust what your eyes are seeing. And that, I think, like physically when you walk on the field, that's the most difficult part for these guys.
It is just a different game though, isn't it? Like it's not – how the position was taught even 5 years ago. Like, have you seen the game just change within the last 10 years?
100%. And you'll see that just in the way that people are playing out of the gun, right? When would we ever seen an RPO or the side adjust, the things that we see like that off the run action? Like, we see so much of that now. That puts defenses in a real position to like stress them out, but it also puts quarterbacks in a position where they really have to use their legs if they're fooled at all, right? If there's any indecision, you'll see guys like Deshaun and all those other individuals really using their legs to create space and extend plays. And coaches aren't always trying to make the perfect play call anymore, right? You used to go in the play in the huddle and you'd have three calls, right? You'd have a run one way, a run the other way, and then you'd have another pass option. And now it's like, all right, we've made a call and we think that we have a quarterback who will help fix things if it's not exactly like we intended. So that creates a little bit of a difference in play at the quarterback position. It really puts an emphasis on having somebody who can extend plays. And like, if you have a quarterback who can't get a first down with their legs, he's either not going to be in the NFL for long or he's going to be really old. Like we're never again going to see a Tom Brady, right? And that sounds crazy because Tom Brady's going to go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. But there's not going to be another guy who's like Tom Brady who's going to get an opportunity to do the things that he did.
You're so right. And it's like, you know, in college, you see some of these guys running around making plays. And, I mean, Johnny Manziel was maybe – I mean, he really was the chicken with his head off, just chucking it up to Mike Evans, making magic, and we kind of fell in love with it. But a lot there's that, but you're talking about the – like, it looks like that, but it is – kind of planned out with a lot of these quarterbacks today, where it seems like they might be running around just trying to pull something out of their ass. But I mean, they're seeing the game on a different plane where it's all kind of planned out. That it's not just by accident, like maybe Johnny Football was once upon a time.
Yeah, there's a level of structure that they need to play with in order. So you can't repeat the level of success if you're not playing within structure. And as much as I love Johnny, like as a person and as a player, that's why he struggled, right? Because he didn't have the structure to be able to operate when it's like, okay, Johnny, here are the rules. Yeah. Like you have to play within these boundaries and you got to take this throw when it's available. And then if it's not, then you have the opportunity and the freedom to get a little bit more creative. Like, he struggled with that part, and that's why you see a lot of the other guys flourish. Like Mahomes, like when number one is open and they need to get the ball out on rhythm, he takes it, right? And he's successful in all those different times. And then when we see the big exciting play and he runs around for 10 seconds and he throws the ball down the field, they get those big explosive plays. But it only works because on first down, he's taking completion, right? He's ahead of the chains, and they get the opportunities to really drive the ball down the field and let Mahomes be Mahomes. And all the guys that we're talking about in terms of the upper echelon guys, that's what they've done so well.
Yeah, so, kind of related to that, is there any quarterback that you've looked at in the past or either see now that you think, man, they just played in the wrong era, right? Like a guy from 20 years ago who would destroy it in today's game, or a guy who's trying to come in today's game who, you know, is going to struggle to make a team, but, you know, 10 years ago would have been a first round pick.
Oh, wow. Who? You're talking about, so they would have been a first round pick now, or would a first round pick previously?
Well, just thinking, you know, if there's not going to be another Tom Brady, like who's a guy who 10 years ago would have been a number one pick, but today teams aren't looking at him, or the other way around, thinking
Davis
guy
Mills,
like Antoine Randall back in the.
Yep. Davis Mills would have been probably the first pick in this year's draft, if we didn't care about that, right? And not that he's just a horrible athlete, but he doesn't move in the way that a lot of people are expecting quarterbacks to move now at the position. But he would have been a guy where it's like, yo, boom, he's really good. Another guy who would have been a lot more successful later came out like maybe 10 to 15 years prior, Brad Kaya. I don't know if people are like even remember him.
Yeah.
Brad Kaya, like, could throw the ball amazing. Right, he made all the throws. He was really accurate, but he had an inability to really move well in the pocket. He also had an inability to like escape and add value with his legs, and that didn't work for him or at the time. So he wasn't able to be successful. But I think that if he was in the air where he had his back to the line of scrimmage and he was going hard play action to put his foot in the ground, he'd have been successful. Like, he'd have had a chance to have a really long career.
And there's got to be a quarterback that you look back at like 10 years ago and you're saying, shit, if he played now and he was used right, like, he would have been dominant.
Ooh, I'm trying to think. I mean, of course you can think about like a Mike Vick, right? Like, just obviously I think that we know Mike Vick would have been, he was a great, but he'd be even more successful. Like, the way that we're designing offenses, he would have been a world beater for a long time, or at least until he went to jail, if they were doing things a little bit different. I'm trying to think of who else would have been amazing. Like the Randall Cunninghams of the world. He was a really good quarterback, but he had to do a lot of the things. Like, he had to be creative on his own. He wasn't given the opportunity, like the structure of the offense that would flow and allow him to do those things.
Yeah.
Or like, if we think about it, like Lamar wouldn't be playing quarterback 15 years ago. And he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Like, he just wouldn't have had those opportunities because he didn't play enough from the structure of the pocket.
Where do you think Lamar's career goes from here?
I'm really interested to see, because Lamar has played a game that has been really, and he's fairly accurate, but he's played a game that's been predicated on him really stressing the defense out and making them do things that they're not comfortable with, adding another guy to the box. And if, I don't know how long he can continue to do that. He's avoided a lot of the big hits. So if he can do that, I think that he can be really good for another 6 years.
You're right. Eventually, you're going to get tagged.
Yeah, it has to happen. Like, you don't – you can't not get hit for everything. I wish Lamar the best, because I think he's a supreme talent. And he's so fun to watch. And he makes defenders look silly, even when they have pants, and he just takes a guy out of his shoes. And that's probably one of the funnest things in the world for me to watch. But I just don't know how sustainable that is. But I think he can continue to improve as a passer and from the pocket. I think he will.
Fair enough. First of all, I just got to point out the commitment here from Quincy Avery. I mean, he's golfing. He's now he's in a car driving back. So thanks for working go along into the schedule here, man. That's awesome.
Of course.
Well, I got to ask you that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jake. I don't want to interrupt you.
It's your show, man. So if you
guys, it's your show. Like I said, hey, fire away.
All right. So I know you mentioned working with, you know, Jordan Love, obviously, and that's where a lot of, at least my interest is going to lie on that. But you said, you know, you've only been with him a couple times, but what's like the first thing that you notice when he walks into the room, say, you know, the first 10 minutes or so that you're with him?
On the field or just like as a person?
Either one, I suppose. What did you notice first, I suppose, between those two things?
So, I met him first off the field because we were at like a dinner, but just like how calm he was. Like we were around probably. So the thing that we're at is at David Mulligetta, his agent had a charity event. So it was probably 30 NFL guys, like some of the biggest names in the league, and just how comfortable he was in his own skin. And I think that that's really key to being successful. Right, successful quarterback. Like you don't can't care about what other people think about you, and he was very much so that. And then when we got on the field, the thing that struck me the most is like, I heard he had a strong arm, but then you see it in person next to two guys with like really live arms, and you're like, oh, like he can really throw the ball. Like he can really push the ball down the field, and he throws the ball with energy. When his feet are in a good position or when his feet are in an awful position, he can still make all the throws. And I think that when he learns or gets in a position where his feet can be consistent every time he drops back and he has a great base and he's tied together, like he can have a really special career.
So you mentioned that whole thing about how he's comfortable in his own skin, doesn't care what people think about him, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, at some point, he's replacing a legend in Green Bay and he's not going to be the most popular guy, even with his own fan base, when that happens. How much is that going to help him when he finally steps into that role?
I think it's imperative that you don't give a damn what other people think about you at the quarterback position. Like, and if you do, if you get caught up in the noise, because there's going to be tens of thousands of people are going to be talking shit about him on Twitter week after week, no matter how good he plays, it's not going to be to the level of Aaron Rodgers, right? Immediately, because he just won't have the reps. Like he's going to have blinders on and he's going to be comfortable. Like he knows that he's doing all the things that he's supposed to do. And that's all he can control. And that's going to put him in a position to be really successful.
You know, it's crazy. It's like, and that big arm comes up a lot with people who know Jordan. You know, you mentioned Mugaletta and him and, you know, one of his quarterback teammates at Utah State, all the receivers, they say how strong that arm is. And years past, you might hear that and you're thinking, oh, well, okay, great. You can throw it through a brick wall. So what? But then you see Josh Allen in Buffalo. And I mean, if you've got like this one special trait that is going to bubble to the surface, I mean, that can get you out of a lot of jams and, maybe that's something that can kind of carry him.
Yeah, and I think that he's also and like we know Josh Allen has a super strong arm, right? But the thing that I think made him is like that running ability, right? I think you need two real traits, right? Yeah. At the quarterback position, you need two top-tier traits that are going to allow you to play the game at a high level. And Jordan can also move really, really well. Like he moves at a high level, and it's going to allow him to do some things when he doesn't know, because there's going to be times playing your first real set of games, like he's not going to know exactly what they're doing, but his ability to move and extend plays with his legs and then his ability to drive the ball down the field will allow him to be successful early on and get to the point where he can beat you with his mind.
Do you think, I mean, don't go too far in the weeds, obviously, but like, do you think we see Deshaun play football this year? I mean, what, any idea? And how's he holding up right now?
I expect Deshaun to play football this year.
Yeah. He's doing
really well. Yeah. I think I just posted a video of us working out today, but he's going to be in a good spot mentally. I don't know what's going to happen with the team.
Yeah. Good to hear. Yeah, I mean, because before all this kind of happened, it was not the best of relationships there with the team, right? So a lot of moving parts there. A lot of moving parts.
Yeah. Well, that relationship's probably a little salty, so we'll see kind of how it goes.
Justin, I got a couple. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Derek.
I was just going to ask, what golf course were you golfing at? And then what do you think about Jordan Palmer as a quarterback guru? Does he teach the right information?
I just got done playing at Mystic Lake. I forget the full name, but I'm out in Minnesota visiting family. I think that Jordan is a good quarterback coach. I think that Jordan's actually improved a lot in terms of the things that he's teaching recently as far as yesteryear. So I think that, as with anybody, it's always evolution. And I think that if I look back at myself and saw things that I was teaching 5 years ago, I would be like, yeah, probably wouldn't teach that anymore. And I'm sure that he feels the same way, but I think he's done a really good job recently in terms of getting more into the biomechanics side of things and understanding why things work the way that they do, instead of like going off of like how he necessarily felt when he was playing. And I think that that's allowed him to be a lot better of a coach. But I think that the thing that Jordan does really well is on the mental side of things. He does a really good job helping guys digest playbooks and going through a really good philosophy in terms of allowing them to chunk things together and learn a playbook quickly and efficiently. And I think that, to me, that was where I saw his biggest value before. It's like the mental side of things, understanding your own playbook, and then really doing a good job of understanding defenses and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, Quincy, going back to that, like you mentioned, that mental side of things, just processing the playbook, how do you think that's helped Jordan just kind of having a year off, even though it was a COVID off season, so obviously he couldn't benefit it from it as much? How do you think that benefited him from that mental side of it?
Were you talking about Jordan Love right there?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, this is one of the trickiest all seasons in, and I think that it made it pretty difficult in terms of like navigating it, but having the opportunity to just be around guys, the thing that I think that helped the most was just him having all of OTAs by himself. There's no Aaron Rodgers. He takes all the one reps. And I'm not sure if you guys know this, but like in an NFL practice, no one's really concerned about anybody at the quarterback position other than the starter. They coach the starter, and you just hope to learn things through osmosis. Like, you're there, you're around it, maybe get some information, but that room is built upon how do we make this starting quarterback better? And at practice, how do we revolve things around the starting quarterback? So you may only get two passes in team period and for like a week, right? So you're not getting a high number of like reps, and you're taking a lot of scout team reps, so it's not even your offense. So I think this was a monumental offseason, and he really, really needed that. And I'm really interested to see if like if Aaron goes to camp or not, because if he doesn't, those are going to be 3 weeks that are going to be really, really helpful for his career.
What do you think is going to happen? Like, what's your guess? If it even is a guess.
I've heard some really interesting things. Now it seems like it's leaning toward Aaron's going to come back. So I don't know. Before it was, I was hearing some from people like who were really in the know, like he might just hang up the cleats, like he was fine. But so we'll see. I kind of heard two things in opposite directions, so I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Same here. I mean, for a while, it's been he's dug in, right? Like he's willing to be fined whatever you want to fine him because shit, he can pay for a house in cash, millions and millions of dollars. Like, and this is principled in his mind, but you think the tide might be turning a little? You've heard that it could be turning?
What was that last part? I didn't hear the last word.
Yeah. Sorry. Connection's getting a little wonky. No, I was just saying like, I've kind of heard a lot of that same stuff and down the lines of like, he really is dug in and he doesn't want to play for the Packers unless people are fired. But you've heard like that maybe that tide is turning a little, like he could be playing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the phone broke up a little bit, but I think I heard what you said. Yeah. I think Sorry, I got a call, but, I I think Jordan has an opportunity to, like, when he does get on the field, and he'll probably play at some point this year. Like, whatever happens, like, he's going to get on the field, and he just has to be ready, and that'll give him the opportunity to have a long, long career in Green Bay.
Yeah.
That lasts a long time. And then we just hope that he has people around him to allow him to be successful.
Aaron definitely was messing with the connection there, right? Right when you're going to, like, dive into everything you've heard is when it started getting a little shaky.
It got a little tricky, and then we just came right back. It's wild how that works.
It's fascinating. I mean, it's crazy that it's gotten to this point where, what, 10 days away, something like that, till training camp starts, and we still don't know. Like, we don't know, but.
And it's, I think that the way quarterbacks are treated, especially the top-tier guys, like, GMs are going to realize, like, they don't have the power to just do things without having real conversations with these guys, because they mean a lot more to a team than they do. And we encountered that same situation in Houston. Like, that's what made Deshaun dig his feet in that way. Like, lack of communication with people who are the most important people to the organization does not work well in terms of success. And I know that these guys get paid a lot of money, but it's also like their legacy on the line. Like, guys who really want to be great and want to win Super Bowls, like, those are the guys who care about what's going on in their team. And these guys not communicating with them in a way that allows them to at least have an opinion, or at least give them the feeling that they have an opinion, it's not going to work. And I think that it's going to continue to change, and we'll see even more of it. It might even become really NBA-ish, right? Like, where these star quarterbacks are making a lot more decisions than we know.
It could. I mean, I think they're different situations. I mean, you look at that Houston roster versus that Green Bay roster. I see your point there, but just when you look at the teams and I don't know. I feel like Aaron's situation is a little different than Deshaun's on the field anyways.
For sure. Aaron was in a situation where his team was still really good and they're going to have an opportunity to win an NFC championship and a Super Bowl for sure. But also I'm like, I don't just want to, like, have to be doing it all on my shoulders. I know he has a really good receiver. Like, why not put all the pieces around him? Like, the window's so short in the NFL in terms of winning a championship. Why not do everything that you can every time to appease the quarterback and put the guys around him? And then guys that he likes, who are the fifth, sixth receiver on the roster, they should probably just be on the team because Aaron Rodgers wants them on the team. And that's how things work, because it's not worth enough money to really piss him off. Like, those are the things that guys should think about, not necessarily, like, just who's a GM or who we're hiring, but, like, hey, Aaron, what makes you enjoy coming to work more every day?
I mean, Jake Kumerow took his one reception right here to Buffalo. You know, it could have had that catch in Green Bay. Like, that's what you're getting at. 100%. But there's a certain degree of just needing to keep a guy happy is your point, which, hey, that's okay. I can see that.
A lot of us have wives and girlfriends in here, I'm sure. And, like, sometimes you just got to take one on the chin to keep them happy. And that's what you do with the guy you're paying $35 million.
That's why Seattle's so interesting, because Russell Wilson, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you hear different things. It sounds like maybe he was pretty unhappy. I mean, he wanted some personnel control. Maybe he wanted Sierra kind of around a little bit more. John Schneider's like, all right, I'm done with this guy. Pete Carroll's like, absolutely not. And he wasn't willing to, like, tarnish his brand. So he just kind of swallowed his pride and is still the quarterback. I don't know if he burned anything there, but that's another interesting case.
I'll be more mute on that one just because I probably have way too much knowledge of that one. I don't know, like, what I should say, what I shouldn't. So I'm going to just leave that one alone.
All right. I mean, you can let it rip, you know, it's fine.
I'm sure. Yeah. No, I'm pretty tight with his quarterback coach. I'm like, nah, that one I'll stay out of.
Okay. All right. Fair enough, man. Well, hey, anybody else got anything here before we close it up?
Absolutely. I'll throw one out there real quick if you have time for one more.
Definitely.
Okay. So I'm a Bears fan, clearly a big Justin Fields fan. But if you're a Bears fan, you're born a defensive guy. Clearly, NFL offenses and the quarterback position in particular are the sport's greatest innovators. But do defenses deserve any credit these days for innovating in the game? Who are you sort of giving flowers to on this topic? Who are there any defenses that deserve credit for innovation?
So I really like the way that, so when you watch the Rams play, and this may be a product more of personnel than scheme, but I think the scheme is really sound too. But the way in which they use two eye coverages and still do a really good job in the run game, and that might just be from Aaron Donald, right? Like, he's such a menace that it makes it hard to do anything when he's on the field. And then you also have Jalen Ramsey, who absolutely dominated one side of the field in terms of receiver play. But watching the things that they do in terms of the rotation and being able to have two eye coverage so you feel like you shouldn't be able to pass, but still being able to get enough guys involved in the run game, no matter who is the quarterback, I think that watching those guys in terms of what they're doing is my favorite team to watch on defense right now. Another team that I think they do things very, very simple, but they do them so well each and every play is the Indianapolis Colts. Right, they're just like big, they're physical, and they make you just make do things a little bit faster than you anticipate it, and they hit you every single time. Like, the physicality throughout the game with the Indianapolis Colts is so difficult to withstand, and you see guys just like wither away at the end of the game, whether it's turnover or like a pass that's incomplete that should have been complete, and it's just because they did such a good job of staying sturdy and sound in the things that they were doing. Snap after snap after snap, and hitting you and hitting you and hitting you, and then you just kind of wither away. Like, I don't know if this is worth it. So those are two teams that I really like for two different reasons.
Yeah. Do you see it the same sort of way, that defenses are always trying to catch up with offensive innovation?
What was that? Do I see it the same way in terms of what do you mean by that?
Like, schematically. There's no defensive scheme out there that's sort of the star of the game that's widely talked about. You have breakout stars on defense, but on offense, you do have those schemes that are kind of the star of the show.
I think we see some of it. Like, we see some of the things that people are doing. Like, when Seattle was running their one high defense, and they did a really good job of, on one side of the field, what they would do is they would carry the seam, the number two receiver, and on the boundary side, they would like what's called pass it off and switch, which means the curl flat defender would pass off that number two who's pushing vertical, and he would sink inside of the hook curl to the boundary, and that corner would play cut coverage and work and try to split the difference between number one and number two. That became a big thing, and then that's what the Atlanta Falcons ran when they went to the Super Bowl. I just don't think people care about defenses or the nuances of defenses enough to really have those conversations. But they did an amazing job of running one high. Like, they ran in the Chargers. That was the defense the Chargers were running. And, like, there's families of defenses in the same way that run the same thing over and over and over again. I just think that we don't care enough about defenses as a whole and as much as we should. But there's some families of defenses that really make it difficult on guys to be successful.
Derek?
I got it. Sorry,
right. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Having the relationships you do with some of those big profile name quarterbacks, have you ever met someone through those connections that you were fangirling over, where you were like, oh, wow, it's a little shocked that you met them?
No, but I met some really cool people. Like, one night I was at Diddy's house, and he was doing like he's about to release an album, and he just added us over his house. But that was probably the coolest one. Like, I have no business being here. Yeah. So I guess I almost fangirled over that. Or meeting Rihanna. Rihanna was a cool one, and I tried to play it cool. Like, I didn't fangirl. That was in my mind. I wanted to.
Nice.
Awesome. Quincy, I think we found out how a dude living out of his freaking car, like, with nobody responding to a Facebook message, is now meeting Rihanna and, you know, golfing here on a fine Sunday night. So that was awesome. Thanks so much, man. That was great.
Man, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Awesome. Well, hey, we'll catch you up soon.
Let's do something. And I want to like go through a game. We can watch some film together. And I want to talk about something that my quarterback, one of the quarterbacks I'm training, what they're trying to do on a few different plays and how it worked out and why they're successful, why they won. So if you guys are down with that, I would love to hop on and do that later on.
When Jordan loves to win the Super, wins the Super Bowl, we can review that.
That's right. That's right. Anytime. Seriously, Quincy, like that's a great idea. We should do that.
All right. That's a bet. We'll get it done.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
All right. See you guys.
See you, dude.